Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast. I'm Janie Lee Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quit lit authors, and sober heroes. Welcome to the podcast. My goodness, I honestly don't even know where to start this week. I've never known a week like it. And it's been difficult to decide what to bring you this week on the podcast, because on the one hand, literally, coronavirus is the only thing that anyone can talk about. And understandably, it's like, you know, nothing we've ever known in our lifetimes. And yet, by the same token, life's going on, isn't it? And sometimes people want hope and positivity and want to talk about other things too. And if this is going to go on for a while, then we've just got to find some kind of new normal, at least some of the time. One thing I've been talking quite a lot about this week, I was a guest on Alex and Lisa's podcast, The Sober Experiment, which was really nice to chat to them. And we were talking about stepping away from fear. We have to find a way to reduce our anxiety levels. And this is, I think, my focus really, is that I just really want to try and encourage you to remain positive and hopeful, because fear is so contagious, and it is fear. It's fear of something that may never happen, and that's not to underplay the seriousness of what's going on at the moment. I'm really well aware that it can be so easy to appear glib and insensitive, and I'm so aware of people with underlying health conditions, with children who are being traumatized by not feeling safe at the moment. But just so much is going on that's so out of our comfort zone in every way. And when we feel our basic human needs are not being met, you know, we flippantly comment on the toilet roll crisis, but actually it's our sort of, we're going into survival mode, all of us, aren't we, really, when we're panic buying for that kind of thing. But I really do think that that the only way we're going to, all of us, get through this is by focusing on love and compassion, because they're also contagious. And if we can focus on the love and the compassion and the kindness and the sense of community spirit, and we can step away from the fear, then you know, it brings us back to the present. And that's what we can do right now, is to focus on the present. Anyways, I've got a lot of podcasts lined up, a lot of interviewees that I recorded, pre-recorded ages ago, and some of it just doesn't feel appropriate to bring you right now. Anyways, I made the decision to bring you a little recording that I did with Bryony from the brand Boucher, because kombucha is something we've been talking about for absolutely ages, and I love this brand and I love the work that she does. So I thought, let's just bring that little interview with you to you, and introduce some of you to the ins and outs of what kombucha is, because it's something that we've spoken about a lot. And then also, I thought what I'd do is I would bring you the interview that I did with Dr. Gemma Newman. She's also known as the Plant Power Doctor. She's a medical doctor who also focuses on the benefit of eating more plants, really. A totally sensible, amazing woman who does focus on hope and possibility. Now, I did play you a tiny clip from that last week, and also the interview has been broadcast elsewhere. So I want to apologise if you have already heard this interview, but it just occurred to me, I just get the sense that there's going to be a lot of listeners to this podcast who don't necessarily follow my other work. So I thought it just feels important right now to bring you the views and the information of Dr. Gemma Newman, because I think she has some interesting insights into boosting our immunity, which is always going to be a good thing, whatever else is going on. And also, she does talk about the importance of good mindset. Now, I must stress that I did pre-record this interview a week and a half ago, I think it was. And as you'll be well aware, things are changing daily, perhaps hourly. So I apologise in advance if she does say anything in that piece that is no longer relevant. But anyways, you get a chance to hear that interview with Dr. Gemma Newman. And after that, I'm also going to mention just a few really simple tips for staying grounded and staying in the moment and nurturing yourself. My biggest fear through all of this is that people who are in early sobriety will just kind of give up and just hit the fuck it button. And I feel so passionate that this is the time more than ever when we really need to support people with anxiety and help them through this. Find a way. There's lots of resources. People are putting lots of stuff out there at the moment. I've got a free visualization, like a little kind of meditation that is very short, and it just encourages you to just step away from the fear, that panic island, as I've been calling it, just to calm yourself down, because we're all feeling it. We all feel this sense of panic rising, and it's an awful feeling. And for anyone who's already feeling anxious, it's such a difficult time. So I think we've all got to do everything we can to encourage people to step away from that fear, and not to turn to the bottle, because, you know, let's face it, the answer is never going to be in alcohol. The answer can never be to numb yourself out. I was talking with Lisa and Alex about how frustrated I am by these kind of hideous ads and memes and things that are popping up for, you know, the kind of keep calm and drink alcohol kind of messages. And it just couldn't be more wrong, really. And actually, we were saying the awful thing is, years ago we'd have probably thought they were, you know, highly amusing, but not anymore. It really is not the answer. So if you are struggling, please reach out for help. You know, I run the Sober Club. It is a membership site, but anyone can get in contact with me. There's lots of free stuff there as well. And if you are part of my community or any other community, this is just a great time to stay connected. Having said that, I do think it's a really good tip to avoid excessive use of social media at the moment, and regular media. You know, don't wake up in the morning and switch the news on, because you will be literally on that panic mode before you even get out of bed. You know, just give yourself a few moments of reflection. And, you know, if the sky hasn't fallen in, I know it feels like it might, but if it hasn't fallen in, then just take a moment to actually appreciate the day. So we're in very unusual times, clearly. I had to think long and hard, should I bring you this interview? And I decided that I would. I recorded this with Bryony from Boucher, and you know, again, another small business. This time is critical for small businesses who are struggling. And, you know, we want these alcohol-free drinks brands to continue. So I really think these small businesses need our support right now. So here's the interview that I recorded with Bryony from Boucher. And also after that, I'm going to play you my interview with Dr. Gemma Newman, which is all about the coronavirus. So enjoy the interview. Well, I don't know about you, but I am starting to love kombucha. I have been trying various kombuchas for a long time now, and I'm finally settling on some I love. It's so nice to be able to speak with Bryony Dunseith from Boucher. Bryony, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Hello. No, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's great to talk to you. And I mean, your bottle, I mean, even just the bottles before we even get into the drinks, so beautiful. Just such a lovely brand. You've obviously spent a lot of time thinking about it. We'll talk about your branding and all of that stuff. But first off, let's just hear a little bit about you. What's your sort of your story, your sober story, if you like?
Sober story. So I didn't have a background in drinks or anything like that at all. It really just came about through my own decision to stop drinking back in 2018. So I'm just coming up to my 2-year soberversary, which is just crazy if you'd known me before. be this long. Yeah, so basically I'd had about 10 years on and off of stopping and starting. I was a very sociable person, so it was just quite a difficult thing when it was around me all the time. And it wasn't really one major issue or one real event. It was just a sort of groundhog day of nothing really getting done, feeling quite unwell a lot of the time. I felt it was affecting some of my mood, my thinking, my physical sense as well. And just one morning I woke up and I had just had too much to drink the night before, and it was just that sense of shame which was happening more and more often, not remembering going to bed, that kind of thing. And I just thought, this is the day I'm going to stop. And luckily I had a phone conversation with my sister Gala, and she had a very similar experience the night before, and we both decided to do it together.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, it was the best thing.
You had a buddy, yeah.
To have that buddy. And then the next day, of course, we found Club Soda. Mm-hmm. And that was the game changer, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, finding that sober tribe, seeing like thousands of other people who were all leading sort of relatively normal lives, yet still, you know, struggling with this one thing of drinking too much and not being able to stop. That was my thing.
So, no obstacle. Yeah. And how did you go about, quitting then?
I just lived and breathed quit literature. Mm-hmm. You know, I read all the books, Annie Grace, Catherine Gray, you know, all of the big ones. And it was their ability to make it not like you have this massive problem, that the problem was me, you know, the problem was alcohol and how addictive it was. And it was just a case of changing your belief systems, retraining your brain to stop thinking, you know, alcohol is necessary, alcohol is fun, and start seeing it as something that was actually making me quite sad, you know, and not feeling very well. And it was that turnaround in the brain training. And I listened to podcasts, I'd take the dog out and just plugged in, listen to all of them, you know, very much like yours.
Yeah, your story sounds very similar to mine. Yeah. So what brought about the drink then? Presumably you were looking at alcohol-free alternatives, and was there nothing that kind of floated your boat then at the time?
Yeah, no. I mean, I think I've heard you say the same thing on one of your podcasts about, we were wine drinkers, you know, nice wine. And that whilst the beer companies and companies like Seedlip were coming up with all the gin alternatives, and you could have all the beers, and that was amazing, that was great. But they didn't sort of feel as refined. And I found a couple of supermarket brands of sparkling wine, which were quite nice. And then I looked at the label, and they had like over 40 grams of sugar per bottle.
Oh, wow.
I was wondering why I was not losing weight. I mean, apart from lots of chocolate, but I was, you know, I was sometimes, you know, I could get through a bottle in the evening, and you know, it was just so full of sugar and quite synthetic. You know, it didn't feel like it was very good for me again, you know, just like the wine wasn't very good for me. And it was going to my first Club Soda Mindful Drinking Festival. And that was in the July, so a couple of months after I'd quit.
Yeah.
And I came across my first sip of kombucha, and it was like, wow, this is different, this is amazing. It was just the right level of kind of acidity, it was low sugar, and because it's fermented, it was naturally like had this, it tricked your brain. I was like, are you sure there's no alcohol in this?
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, obviously, even in the last couple of years, it's changed dramatically, hasn't it, the market in this country? And you've probably heard me say on the podcast, I've said it lots of times, that in 2018, I went to Canada and just couldn't believe how much kombucha was around. I mean, on every street corner, in corner shops, in garages, everywhere. And of course, now it's starting to happen here. But just for anyone who isn't aware, just explain what it is, exactly what is kombucha.
Okay, so kombucha is a fermented tea. So you can use any tea, but it has not herbal tea. It has to be black tea, green tea, or white tea. Mm-hmm. You create a sugary tea, and then you use something called a SCOBY, which is a symbiotic colony of bacteria and yeast. And so it's not just yeast, which you'd use for fermenting beer. And the yeast eats the sugar in the tea and turns it into alcohol. And then the bacteria eats the alcohol and turns it into these gut-friendly enzymes. So it's kind of like this magical concoction.
And of course, you one can brew one's own, can't one? But I haven't been brave enough to try it myself.
No, I did start making my own. Thinking, yeah. You know, this is amazing. But, you know, it is a very kind of scientific thing. You know, it has to be the perfect conditions, temperature-wise. Because you are dealing with a bacteria and it's a living thing, you know, you've got to be very, very careful, particularly when you're producing something commercially. It's got to be safe. It's got to be, you know, it has to be kind of maybe filtered a bit if you want it to last a bit longer. Otherwise, it's like a living thing, like a yogurt, so it has to be kept in the fridge. It can very easily go wrong, and timing wise as well. You know, you can leave it a couple of days too long and all of a sudden it's gone to a vinegar. So
yes,
home brewing wasn't going to be kind of necessary.
sure. And then and what about the sort of, I mean, as I've already said, then because of the sort of fermentation, it's good, it's actually good for your gut, but what about the sugar content, in inverted commas, you know, where does the sugar come in, and why is the sugar in kombucha okay for us as opposed to, as you say, the massive amount in some of the other alcohol-free products?
The kombucha is kind of eaten up in the fermenting process,
the sugar.
Kind of use some of the sugar, so it becomes naturally quite low in there. I mean, I only, my boucher is organic as well, so we only use organic raw cane sugar, but it's just that it's naturally low. So my kombucha is 2.7%, whereas say many of the alcohol-free wines are about 8 or 9%. So, you know, that's
great.
And it makes it low calorie. So it's, under a bottle. So.
Yeah. And so when you decided to start the brand then, I mean, as I say, the bottle's beautiful. Tell us about, you know, what happened then and how you teamed up with a brewery to make this for you. What was it that you were looking for to get your sort of USP, you know, to make yours different?
Well, I'd see all of the kombuchas I was coming across, they were all in a sort of beer style bottle, you know. And when I did finally find a decent restaurant that sold it, you know, I was over the moon, but it still felt like I had a beer bottle on the table. And that's when I sort of thought, right, I want to make a kombucha which is going to be maybe flavored even more like a wine, and I wanted it to look like a wine. That was, you know, I'd sort of had the bottle idea in my head almost before, you know, we had the flavor. And I got in touch with a kombucha consultancy company called Good Culture Kombucha, and they were running a workshop in Berlin, and so I went on that, and they then put me in touch with Gina and Luke, who do make Wild Fizz Kombucha as their brand, but they've got this amazing brewery and they do make it for other companies. So I got in touch with them, and we started at that point kind of sitting down and really kind of going through all of my ideas basically, and that was looking at the wines I liked. So that's sort of Sauvignon Blanc and the sort of Muscadet kind of dry, minerally kind of wines. And we looked at all their flavour profiles, and it was all of the green fruits that were kind of jumping out, green pear, green apple.
Right. That's what's different, right? That's interesting. It's interesting you say that, because I'm not a fan of the sort of raspberry type kombuchas. I don't like those. That's probably why I like yours. That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, a lot of those ones are kind of raspberry flavored or ginger flavored, and
there's
a lot. But what we did was we went through loads of different flavors, but we settled on the gooseberry and the quince, and they are only added in very small quantities, like tiny amounts, along with the green tea. Essentia green tea kombucha is the base, so it's kind of very delicately flavored, which again is kind of makes it a little bit different, I suppose.
That's amazing, because I mean, you really genuinely can say that this is a healthy drink.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
It is filtered, which we decided to filter it, which does remove all of the yeast and some of the good bacteria. And there is still some, I say some, it's probably like still billions of good bacteria in there. But with the yeast taken out, it means it doesn't have to be kept refrigerated, and it can't continue to ferment in the bottle.
Okay. So
keep it on the shelf or in your wine rack, or, you know, in a storeroom in a restaurant or what have you. And it's not going to get more sour very quickly.
Yeah. And as you say, it, you know, because you've got this beautiful bottle, you can actually put it you know, we can take it as a gift, can't you? Someone was asking at an event I was speaking at recently, well, you know, if you we're so used to going to someone's house for dinner and we take a bottle of wine, it's what we do. And we could so take yours because it just looks so lovely. And also, I know that you've been thinking about, you know, for the future, for the brand, you're thinking about restaurants, which is, it seems quite obvious, but also sort of weddings and events companies. I mean, it's perfect for it, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I've already got one, quite a large Sussex-based events and weddings company. They're really on board. They absolutely love it. The chefs there love it.
That's brilliant. And
they've already started talking to their couples who are booked in for weddings this year to say, you know, have this as an option. Because at the moment, they just have orange juice in a wine glass.
Oh, God, I know.
Or a short glass. And yeah. But then very specifically for those moments, which are like the toast on the wedding
speech. Yeah.
And, you know, you'd feel completely left out. I mean, that was what I feel at all events. And but, you know, that can go into other kind of events, you know, like artists' private views and galleries and that kind of thing, where, again, it seems people are willing to spend £20 a head or more on their drinking guests.
Yes.
But they think, oh, we can save here on our non-drinking guests. But often I think the number of non-drinking guests is actually increasing.
And definitely.
When people are asked, like, would you like to give your non-drinking guest something special? Actually, they've said, oh, actually, yeah, I just didn't realise there was anything out there.
Yeah, it is. It's changing, isn't it? Slowly, which is good. But I think in the past, again, I've probably said on the podcast before, you know, there are so many celebrities now that are coming out and saying they're not drinking, which of course is wonderful. You know, it raises yet more awareness. And so many cool people are not drinking. And I sometimes think, you know, if you were hosting an event and you had, you know, Zoe Ball coming along and Davina McCall and Kim Kardashian and Brad Pitt and Russell Brand, would you actually, you know, if they were there along with a whole host of other people, would you actually seriously be serving wine, beer and fizz and offer them warm orange juice? I don't think so. I don't think so. I think you'd have some choices, wouldn't you?
But it is getting the word out there, you know, which is amazing, which, you know, having someone like you with who's got this great platform to kind of be a voice to say, you know, and Laura Willoughby as well, you know, and the Club Soda guys.
Yeah.
I think that is starting to get the message out there.
It is. And are you currently in any bars? Is that bars or restaurants? Is that starting to happen for you as well?
It's starting to happen. I've got a couple of country pubs. There's the Shepherd and Dog, which is in Sussex, so only very sort of locally. And then there's a little town down the road. I've got a couple of meetings tomorrow in Worthing. It has been a slightly harder sell because I have approached some and they've sort of said, oh, I don't think there's much market for it, or we did have a kombucha and we don't have it anymore because they didn't want it. But again, I think I'm needing to really talk to restaurants to sort of retrain them on how they think about it.
Yes.
It's got to be on the menu. You can't, people won't ask for it. Even non-drinkers don't think it's there. So it's got to be visible on the menu. It's got to be there with your wines, or, you know.
Yeah, I just had one thought actually. With your lovely bottle, what happens if you open it and you don't drink it? Or I mean, I would never have asked that question about a bottle of wine.
I know. I've never left any wine in the bottle. It's best kept refrigerated once you've opened it. But I've had it, you know, 7 to 10 days in the fridge.
It's really? Wow. Oh my goodness.
Well, certainly 7 days. I've had it after 10 days and it's been absolutely fine.
Oh, that's surprising.
Yeah, so it's like I say, I think because of the filtration, it doesn't sort of, it's not hugely active in continuing to ferment, but obviously it will naturally sour over time. But you probably would leave a bottle of white wine open in the fridge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Amazing. Good stuff. Well, I wish you all the best with it. And so if I was to interview you in a year's time, maybe I will, what would you have hoped would have happened sort of for your brand and for the alcohol-free drinks trend generally?
Well, I mean, obviously just normalizing alcohol-free wines in restaurants. That was my original kind of business plan, was to kind of get it out there. It's for people to have something so they don't feel left out when they're drinking. And I, you know, I'm happy for more kombucha brands. I'm not saying I want to be the only one. I think, you know, this whole idea of choice, like you just said, you know, there should be 3 or 4. You know, we have 20 craft ales in a bar. It would be lovely to see 3 or 4 different kinds of alcohol-free wines and different kombuchas. So for the alcohol-free market, that's what I'd like to see.
Yeah, fantastic.
Getting on board. For Boucher itself, you know, we really want to create another flavour. We've got, it'd be nice to do a rosé. I was also looking into doing maybe a nighttime party kind of Boucher. Nighttime, which might have some sort of more botanicals and sort of natural energizing herbs or something in it. But yeah, we'll have to see. I definitely want to do more flavours.
Do you? It's very exciting. I can imagine you'll have a whole, you know, I bet you're always constantly thinking of flavours and, oh, can I do that one?
Yeah, the creative process.
Is very creative.
It's certainly keeping me sober, you know, it's like, there's no way I'd have been able to set this business up if I'd still been drinking. And it's like,
really?
Given me a whole new lease of life.
Yeah. What were you doing before?
I'm a freelance copywriter, which I'm still doing. Still doing a bit of, but hopefully to sort of... stop doing that sort of, and do more of this. I wish I could give it my
It's funny you say that though, because I often, you know, my sober club members often say, you know, without, if they hadn't stopped drinking, they could never have pursued the stuff they wanted to do, whether it's a career or a challenge or some kind of travel or all kinds of things. It is amazing, isn't it, how it just opens up your world. And in your case, what an incredible creation, you know, to have come from that. It's wonderful.
Thank you.
Very exciting. So just give us your website then, where people can find more information or where you would like them to buy it from.
So my website is bouchakombucha.com, which is bouchakombucha.com. And so you can buy it by either three bottles or by the case on my website. It's also on wisebartender.co.uk, I think. Wise Bartender. Yeah. They have a whole range of drinks. So you can buy it by the bottle there, and you can buy other things as well, you know, in one delivery if you're looking to get quite a few different drinks.
Yeah, we've actually got a discount code as well for
Wise
Bartender. So I'll pop that on the show notes. That's great.
Yeah, do. So do come there, and obviously as soon as we've got new brands coming out, you know, you can join our mailing list and hear about that.
Great, fantastic. Thank you so much, Bryony. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we do have a case of Boucher to give away, so make sure you check that out. Go to thesoberclub.com. There's also info on my other site where I talk about all my holistic recommendations at imperfectlynatural.com. And as promised, some of you may have heard this interview before. If so, and you want to skip it and go to my bit at the end, do come back at the end, because I've got a whole bunch of stuff around self-care. But hopefully you'll enjoy this interview with medical doctor and plant power doctor, as she's known, Dr. Gemma Newman.
I'm so pleased to get to speak with Dr. Gemma Newman. And finally, we're going to get a little bit of sense, I'm hoping, on the whole coronavirus and immunity issue. Dr. Gemma Newman is a medical doctor, but also you're known as kind of plant power doctor, aren't you, Gemma?
I am. That's kind of my
Yeah, I love that. I really love the whole holistic approach. So I can't think of anyone better to bring us this information. So for anyone who has managed to be buried in a cave, what is the coronavirus?
Well, coronavirus is actually one of many, but it's a brand new one, which is why there's been a lot of attention to it. So the common cold and other viruses are also coronaviruses. And the reason they're called coronaviruses is because it's kind of like a crown. It's a circle shape. And every other cough and cold that you get is probably another form of the coronavirus. It's just that this one is a new one. And that's why there's
sort of a new mutation of it, as it were.
Yes, a new mutation of it. Mm. And what's interesting is that there are so many viruses out there. I think there's about an estimated 1.6 million as yet unidentified viruses that are estimated to be on the planet. But this is a brand new one that has been particularly unique, because it's one that has gone from an animal vector into humans, which is why there is a risk there to the people around the globe from coronavirus.
Yeah. And what is the current situation? I appreciate it's changing daily, but is it, in your opinion, really a pandemic? I mean, there seems to be a tremendous amount of hysteria right now. What's your view as a medical doctor?
Well, the definition of a pandemic is really an epidemic that's gone global. And so I suppose in theory, yes, it is a pandemic because every continent has been affected now apart from Antarctica. Mm. So yes, it is a pandemic, but I do want to stress that so far what we know is that 81% of people who are affected are only mildly unwell. And I think it's important to protect ourselves, but also to remain conscious of creating a kind of a calm environment around this, because stress increases cortisol, which reduces your immune system and can be very counterproductive. And I think it's almost feeding into the national consciousness, this fear of the unknown and this fear of the virus. It captures people's imaginations, but it's important to be cautious, but I think it's also important to remain optimistic.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll talk more about boosting immunity, but just explain for us, for those people who are concerned about catching it. I mean, I'm guessing that we, you know, we'll need to be aware that people with underlying health conditions, the elderly, perhaps need to be more concerned. So how does it spread? I mean, are we just talking about contact with another person, or can it spread sort of through the air? You know, if you're in an aircraft and someone is infected, how exactly does one get it?
Well, the World Health Organization is asking the very same question. Because it's so new, we don't really know for sure. At the moment, it seems to be droplet spread, much like any other virus that we'd normally experience. So if you've sneezed into your hand and you've touched a surface, then in theory, you could potentially pick it up from that. But otherwise, it's not airborne that we know of as yet. But we don't know. It's brand new. But so far as we can tell, it's just droplet spread at the moment. And I suppose the main interesting thing about it is that because it's such a mild illness for a lot of people, that's where it's more vulnerable to the so-called super spreaders, which is these poor people who don't really even know that they have the virus, and they're going about their daily business as usual, and other people are becoming infected. But
well, I suppose that would be the next question. How would one know if one has it then? I mean, I suppose if you've been to one of the areas that's affected, if you've been in China in that particular region, then it might be wise to be tested if you have symptoms. But for the average person in the UK, I mean, let's face it, it's a time of year when there are lots of sniffles and colds and things around.
Exactly. And I suppose that's why we have to sort of try and remain calm and keep some perspective over it. I mean, the Public Health England advice, it's changing every day. At the moment, we have, I think, 51 confirmed cases. There's been well over 13,000 people tested, well over 13,000 people negative. But it's probably going to become more widespread, which is why I think it's important to just, you know, be aware of the fact that it is generally quite mild. But PHE says that if you're a returning traveller and you do become unwell, then that's when you should consider testing at this stage. So, for example, if you've been to Hubei province in China or in Iran or certain lockdown areas in northern Italy or special places of South Korea, mainland China, in the last couple of weeks, and you have a cough, a fever or shortness of breath, then it's wise to consider self-isolating and dialing 111. But that's the current advice in the UK, and I think anything more than that is not Public Health England advice.
But it can take a couple of weeks for it to develop, can't it? So if you were coming back from those places and you felt perfectly well, should you still self-isolate? Is that
not according to so if you come back from those specific places, I think they're suggesting that people self-isolate. These are people that's only the places that have been quarantined,
right?
Whereas if you're just coming back from a holiday, the places that have not been specifically told to self-isolate, then you don't need to. So if you're a returning traveler from those specific areas and you've been told to self-isolate, then yes. Otherwise, generally, no. People are worrying about all sorts of places. Like, you know, there's a lot of hysteria amongst people around, you know, schools and other institutions where there's been someone that's gone somewhere nearby, but it's not actually been in a lockdown zone. And there's a lot of confusion, understandably. But I'd say if you come from a lockdown zone, then yes, self-isolate, but otherwise you don't need to unless you're suffering from symptoms.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's already having a big impact. You know, a conference I was meant to be attending has been cancelled. And I think a few people are, you know, even in the UK, I think a few people are seeing that happen. So
absolutely. Oh, yeah. I've seen the same thing. And, you know, we're being urged to carry on as normal for now. So I think that's really what we should do. But
yeah,
what's interesting is the World Health Organization, actually, because they went on this fact-finding mission to try and find out more, because nobody really knows exactly what the situation is with this new virus. And they have actually suggested that China has done very well at containing this outbreak. Mm. And I find this fascinating that China has actually gone to great lengths to isolate it and to keep it sort of at low levels, and the cases are reducing there, but they think that that's actually bought the rest of the world time really to prepare. So the World Health Organization does suggest that, you know, we should start planning for the fact that it will spread. It's bought us a little bit of time to plan as necessary, and they're suggesting slightly more than Public Health England are suggesting at this stage, which is interesting.
Yeah. But what about people who are kind of in slight panic mode and panic buying of food and trying to stock up on non-perishables? I'm hearing that some supermarket shelves are being depleted rapidly.
I don't think it's time for doing any of that. No, I really think people should try to remain calm around this. It's for most people a very mild illness. Yes, it will come in waves. Yes, we will get more cases. But, you know, there's not really any point in panic buying, because it's not going to change the supply chain. In fact, it's going to make panic buying will make the supply chain very difficult, unnecessarily difficult.
Yeah.
And it's the same with things like, you know, the massive sales of face masks. You know,
yeah, I was just about to ask about face masks. What is your view about that?
I think face masks are important for healthcare professionals who will be seeing lots of people within a short distance over a prolonged period of time. But actually, for the majority of people, the majority of face masks are not particularly useful. And in fact, once they've become wet with the aerosol of your own saliva, you know, quite permeable. So I don't think it's something that I would recommend.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you know, you mentioned medical professionals who are obviously seeing many people and people who are unwell. And of course, they don't all get sick all the time, which would tend to suggest that one's own immunity is very, very important. So
yes,
tell us from, you know, from a medical doctor's perspective, why our own immune system is so key in all of this, and some of the steps that we can take to build up our immunity generally, not just for this virus.
I completely agree. In fact, it's interesting because, as you've said, I see many ill people every year with colds and coughs and flu. Mm. And I think that the important thing is to really maintain that robust immune system, whatever we're facing.
Yeah.
And that's what I would really like people to focus on. So diet is important, making sure that you're having really healthy foods, eating more plants, obviously, as my name would suggest. Mm. You're going to be increasing the amount of phytonutrients that your body's taking in, flavonoids and polyphenols from the berries and the green vegetables. It's so important. And trying to maintain really good gut health, which means a better functioning immune system. So limiting your alcohol would be important for that reason as well. The two things that people really, really don't prioritize is sleep and reducing stress. Those are really important for your immune system.
Yeah.
You know, we've got this 24-hour news cycle where everybody's clicking on it and getting worked up and upset. And we know that stress increases cortisol, which over a long time period really reduces your immune response. And we don't want that. We want people to feel strong and have a functioning immune system. So I'd say aiming to really control your stress and make sure that you're doing things every day that make you feel calm and relaxed, making sure you're getting a decent night's sleep. Don't wait till midnight to go to bed. You know, get yourself a nice early night. Those hours before midnight are so restorative. Staying hydrated, gentle exercise, making sure that you've got foods like, you know, pumpkin and sesame seeds for zinc, for example.
Yeah.
Maybe some Brazil nuts for selenium. And you've got your vitamin C foods, or your berries and your citrus fruits. And then other antiviral foods, which are great. You know, things like garlic and ginger and turmeric and cinnamon, elderberry, mushrooms, And and vitamin D, actually, people forget about vitamin D.
I was just about to ask you about that, because it's really is something of a epidemic of deficiency of vitamin D, and it can make you so unwell, can't it?
Yeah, and it's something that people are not always aware of, that in where we live at this latitude, we're not going to get the amount of sunshine required to synthesize our own vitamin D through the skin in the winter months, obviously, especially. So get yourself a vitamin D supplement to boost your levels as well. That's what I would suggest.
Yeah.
So that you can boost your natural immunity and make sure that you're as prepared as you can be, you know, for any virus.
Yeah. And of course, I suppose the theory is that if you then are unlucky enough to get something, then with a strong immunity, you'll fight it off quicker.
Exactly. Mm. And again, it's so important to emphasize, you know, the mind and the immune system are in a delicate balance. And, you know, stress can be chronic or sudden, but it can make us ill. Stress can make us ill.
Mm. I think it's so important to point to focus on that, actually. And I don't think many people are doing that. I mean, I've got my kids sort of coming back from school in panic mode, because that's all that seems to be happening at the moment, is people are really being... It's all very scaremongering, really. And while I totally understand that we must be vigilant and we must also understand that there are people with underlying health conditions, I think just to kind of panic everyone is a mistake, because, as you say, our stress response is not going to be helpful.
Good study. I was just telling you, actually, that's reminded me of an interesting study that I read. Mm. And it was around the incidence of illness in people based on their mood. It was a study done by Carnegie Mellon University. Mm-hmm. And what they did is they paid them the equivalent of about £500 each, and for that money they basically squirted cold viruses and flu viruses in a different study up their nostrils. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to see who got sick and who didn't. And they did these questionnaires about state of mind and mood and stress, and basically the ones because, like you said earlier, you know, doctors are exposed to these things a lot. We don't always get ill, so there is a difference in innate immunity between people. Yeah. And those who had a more positive outlook and a less stressed state, a good sense of humour, or didn't class themselves as anxious or stressed, I think it was about 1 in 5 of them became unwell. And those that were stressed out or classed themselves as angry, anxious or depressed, it was more like sort of 3 in 5.
Really?
So there was actually like a really big difference between the incidence of infection in these people in the study. So yeah, that would be probably my big take home for everybody is just, yes, we need to be mindful. Yes, we need to look after ourselves, wash our hands, make sure that we follow all the advice from Public Health England, but also just to remain calm and remain hopeful.
Yeah, I feel a few bars of "Don't worry, be happy" coming on at the moment.
Oh yeah, me too.
let me just go back to just something you were saying about gut health and the importance of gut health, because again, you know, we've read an awful lot about that recently, and the importance of the microbiome and how the gut is so intrinsically crucial, you know, to everything else. For those people who are thinking, well, where do I start? Would you agree that a really good variety of food is important, and also, would you encourage taking some form of probiotic?
So the most important take home for gut health is the colors of the rainbow and fruits and vegetables.
Eating a rainbow. Yeah, I love that expression.
Yeah, that's probably the most important take home, because what that does is, when you're eating fruits and vegetables, it breaks down into the fiber from these amazing fruits and veg breaks down into short chain fatty acids in your gut, and these are tremendously protective. Propionate, acetate, butyrate, what they do is a number of functions, but they also feed good gut bugs. So they are essentially what you'd call prebiotics.
Yes.
They provide nutrients and nourishment for good gut bugs to help protect you from illness and to help boost your immune system. If you're having issues with your gut health, then sometimes probiotics are useful. Those are the little bugs that you can get in sachets and liquids and capsule form. But I do sort of suggest a note of caution in that, in the sense of they're a bit like the cavalry coming through. They do contain good gut bugs, but they don't stay in your system, and you kind of poop them out really as you pass through. And also, we don't know how many of them have got active and living bacteria in them. And lastly, diversity is ultimately most important for long-term gut health. And if you're taking probiotics constantly, you're potentially reducing the diversity of your gut microbial bacteria, because you're overloading with two or three or four strains that are beneficial. But actually what you really need is a sort of a symbiotic relationship with many different, hundreds of different types of beneficial bacteria.
Sure. And as you know, I'm, very passionate about encouraging people to ditch the booze or reduce their alcohol. And how does alcohol affect your gut health?
It does not have a good effect on your internal microbiome, I'm afraid to say. Imagine in days of old, you know, we used to try to sterilize surgical equipment using alcohol. And we, you know, there's a reason for that. Drinking alcohol, you're stripping your internal microbiome as well.
Yeah.
So overall, it's really not that great for you.
Yeah. on that note then, linking back to the coronavirus, of course, one of the things that we're all being told constantly is to wash our hands a lot of the time and to do it thoroughly. And of course, we've seen that sales of the antibacterial gels, the shelves are depleted of those now, aren't they? I heard somebody saying the other day, they tried to buy some and it was 48 quid. It's like, what on earth is going on? And again, those gels are, if I'm not mistaken, chock full of alcohol.
Yes.
Is that something that you would advise, or would soap and water, you know, decent soap and water do the same job?
Soap and water does the same job. And if you have access to soap and water, that's what I would prioritize over a hand sanitizer. The reason for that is, as you've rightly pointed out, it does strip you of your own sort of skin protection, your acid mantle. There's a lot of alcohol in that, and it does disrupt the microbiome of your hand and, you know, wherever else that you're washing. That's why people who have eczema tend to find it, you know, very difficult for them to be able to use things like hand sanitizers. So soap and water is just as good if you have access to it. If you don't, then hand sanitizers are, of course, a good idea if you need to use them. But soap and water is just as good and better for your overall microbiome.
Excellent. Thank you. It's such sensible advice. I love it. Thank you so much.
My
so
pleasure.
Let's just imagine if I were to interview you, well, maybe I will in a few months' time. What would your guess or projection be around all of this? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, obviously, I start out by saying I don't know.
Yeah, of course.
I don't know. But what I'd say is, looking at what we know so far, even if we look at the very worst case scenario, which would be something similar to the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic, which had a sort of 2.5% fatality. The thing is, life's very different now to what it was then. Luckily, we do have targeted antibiotics to fight secondary infections. We do have a lot more. And back then, of course, it was wartime, and there were so many people that were infected in the trenches, poor people. Life is very different now. Yes, we have more travel, but ultimately, I think it's just probably going to come in waves. It's going to get worse. Yes, there will be lots of us infected over time, but most of us really don't need to be concerned, because from what we can tell so far, 81% of people, if they do get it, are only mildly affected. I would be more cautious for if people over the age of 80, or people who have chronic sort of conditions like heart disease and diabetes and lung diseases over the age of 60. I can understand why, you know, it would be more important perhaps to be cautious, especially at public events and so on. But yeah, we'll have to see what happens. I think that there will be things that happen in the next few months that we can't predict, and that's what the government have to advise us on. So cancelling a certain public events, yes. Closure of certain public places, yes, that's probably going to happen, and many of us will probably be exposed. But for the vast majority of us, it's really not something to be concerned about. Just cautious vigilance with optimism is what I would say.
Yeah, lovely. Love that. Thank you so much, Dr. Gemma Newman. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
My pleasure.
So just a reminder that I do have a free meditation or visualization, if you like, very, very short, but just a few moments of being able to go within and calm down when things feel like they're getting too much. And just a few other tips that I wanted to bring you. I wrote a blog post, which you're very welcome to have a look at soberclub.com, about creating a a coronavirus toolkit, if you like, or a way of prepping. You know, we talk a lot, don't we, about this, the sober toolkit and the preparations that we need to put in place. And I think when something like this is going on, we need to do the same. We need to acknowledge, what are we going to come up against that is going to send us reverting back to old habits, whether that's negative thinking or drinking? Oh, I'm a poet. You know, what is it that's going to send us back there? And then be prepared. So make sure that we've got stuff that boosts our immunity. And that doesn't mean go out panic buying everything, because as I said last week, I think that's actually really unkind. And you know, the proof is in what's happening now, where I went in a supermarket yesterday, nothing on the shelves. I mean, almost nothing. It's really quite tragic, actually. So I really hope that gets sorted out very soon. But do, you know, invest in good fresh fruit and veg, all the stuff that Dr. Gemma Newman was talking about, juices, smoothies and stuff that boosts your immunity. And do just constantly remind yourself that negative thinking will lower your immunity. So anything that you can do to boost your well-being, definitely walking in nature while we can. The National Trust have stopped got rid of their kind of pay barriers. So this weekend, we can get out to a National Trust property if we're in the UK, which is amazing. I mean, I know the cafes are closed and obviously they don't have the events going on, but we can walk in nature. If you have access to a park, to a forest, to woods, to a National Trust property, to the beach, oh, wow. You know, these things are just going to feel like such blessings to us, such gratitude there. Write that gratitude list. I mentioned last week that I'd seen that Simon Chappell did that lovely post about creating a gratitude wall. It's such a fabulous idea, because right now a vision board can feel too difficult to do because we just don't know. It almost seems too difficult to want to hope for, I don't know, whatever it is, a new career or a holiday in the future. But we can all create a gratitude wall. It's a lovely thing to do with the kids. You know, what is it you're grateful for? Focus on those things. And then if you do have extra time on your hands, again, when you stop drinking, it often feels like there's a ton of time. And whereas normally I would be saying to people, well, book yourself into yoga classes and you know, go to the gym and go to concerts and go to galleries and et cetera, et cetera. That may not be possible for you, but there are lots of things you can do that will boost your well-being, and really great acts of self-care that do work for you. And sometimes it's about remembering what you used to enjoy as a kid. So, you know, maybe you can do some painting or some drawing or some knitting. I did a blog post about this, all the ings, ing, not the negative ones, like the drinking and the drugging and the crying, but the positive ings. So the knitting and the crocheting and the collaging. Obviously, baking, bake a great cake, or even make some energy balls, that will do. All of those things, decluttering your house, that's one that I absolutely have to get around to. There's so much that can be done to just boost your spirits and take you out of fear, to help you step away from fear. And if you can't do anything for yourself, then ask yourself, what can I do for someone else? And if you can't do something physical for someone else, if you, for whatever reason, you can't come into physical contact in any way with another person, then send them a card or an email, or make a phone call. You know, there's always another way. And I think that might be some good that comes out of this. We've all seen those little notes that someone had, that magical idea of putting the note through people's door saying, you know, if you'd like me to get shopping for you or whatever. And, you know, there is a sense of community in all of this. It's starting to happen. It's starting to appear. I'm starting to see one or two good news posts about little acts of kindness and ways where people are supporting each other. So that would be my self-care tip, is practice self-care. And if not, if you can't do it for yourself, then do it for someone else, you know, because as I said at the beginning, fear is contagious. It's so contagious. You can, it's like, you know, you stand next to someone and they, well, not anymore, you don't, but you used to, and they would yawn and you yawn. It's contagious. You know, someone itches and you itch. And fear is massively contagious and it spreads so rapidly. But so is love and compassion. So let's focus on the spread of those rather than the spread of a virus and the spread of fear. I really hope that things will have done another 360 degree turn for the better by the time I bring you the next podcast. But for now, please, please do seek help. If you're finding this time, you know, really off the scale difficult, please seek help. If you're concerned about your drinking, just seek the help that you need. Obviously, if you're clinically dependent, don't stop drinking without medical help. If you are in the process of ditching the booze, then pat yourself on the back. Well done. Stay really strong on this and find a distraction, something that's actually good for you, that really is genuinely a treat, and change your mindset. You know, step away from that fear. And, you know, there's always so much support available. Obviously, if you'd like to join the Sober Club, you are very welcome to join us, thesoberclub.com. Check it out. There is an online course as part of it, Get the Buzz Without the Booze. There's just a massive amount of exclusive content in the membership portal. And then, of course, there's our private Facebook group as well, which is incredibly supportive. But there are masses of free challenges online. If you want to start ditching the booze, why not use this time to choose to be sober? Till next time, see you soon. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast with Jamie Lee Grace. Please subscribe to us on iTunes, rate us, share on social media, and tune in again.